You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, gift giving is a big part of the holiday season, but not all gifts wow us the way they're supposed to. A psychologist tells us why we give bad gifts and how to avoid doing it. Now, the U.S. military routinely burns their hazardous waste, even though other industries are required to use more environmentally sound methods. This results potentially in billions of dollars that need to be spent on cleanup, along with possible health risks for the communities around those sites. ProPublica just released an interactive report complete with maps and charts for each state that detail the more than 40,000 hazardous military sites and their current status of cleanup. Abram Lustgarten is a senior environmental reporter with ProPublica with a focus on the intersection of business, climate, and energy. He's one of the authors of the Bombs in Your Backyard series. Abram, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Well, give us the basics of military toxic waste. Where is it all coming from?
Yeah, well, so we've been looking for the last 2 years or so reporting into environmental legacy left by Pentagon operations of all sorts. And it's essentially, pollution from the manufacturing of bombs, the testing of bombs and munitions, and the operation of airfields and various training facilities, whether it's the Army, Navy, Air Force, or National Guard sites across the country. And as you said, there's 40,000 sites across the country, a cumulative acreage of more than 40 million acres, which is just enormous, larger than the state of Florida.
And in many cases, this might be ordnance ammunition that was state-of-the-art in one decade and obsolete another decade, and they've got to do something with it.
Yeah, that's right. So a lot of these sites can be quite historical. Some are from World War I or World War II, and in some cases they've even been forgotten about. But we just published a story yesterday about munitions and chemicals from those munitions, which were developed in World War II but are still being used today, and the extensive groundwater contamination from that chemical called RDX. It's an explosive at sites across the country as well.
And in one of your pieces, you say, according to federal records, there are close to 200 sites that have been or are still being used to open burn hazardous explosives across the country. So what kind of impact are people worried about in communities where that's going on?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, one of the worst practices that we've come across is this practice of open burn, and it's basically old munitions, bombs, waste, garbage. They set it afire in a bonfire, and that's a practice that most industries used to follow until the 1980s, when the federal government outlawed it and the EPA enacted regulations to oversee those processes. And the U.S. military is the only entity that continues to do that. And even military operations in other countries have ceased open burning because it basically allows unfiltered toxic emissions out into the atmosphere. And so it's heavy metals, it's chemicals, it's PCBs, a lot of carcinogenic substances, and then from many of these burn grounds, that contamination also seeps into the soil and contaminates groundwater, the aquifers and drinking water supplies underneath these sites. So that's an ongoing, as you said, a couple hundred facilities in the United States are still practicing open burning now. One Badger Army ammunition plant in southern Wisconsin was the site of a lot of controversy around the burning, and there's pretty extensive groundwater contamination there as a result of the open burning practices.
And I think you wrote there were statements the U.S. Senate declared about 30 years ago or so saying, okay, yeah, you get an exemption, you can keep burning for now, but we got to come up with a better plan. And that just hasn't happened.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, when the environmental laws stopped other commercial entities, industry, from open burning, the military stepped forward and said, basically, this is about security, this is about protecting the country, and we don't have an alternative, so if you make us stop burning, then, you know, we're going to basically put our troops in danger. We won't be able to train them, or people will get hurt moving munitions around. And they basically got a pass, an exemption or a temporary reprieve from the law then. But since then, there are a number of alternative technologies that have been developed. I mentioned that the practice was banned, in other countries. Europe, Northern European countries have all banned open burning, and it's in part because there are very effective alternative technologies that the militaries in those countries use to get rid of the same sort of munitions. In the United States, they just have been slow to adopt that, in large part because it can be expensive.
Abram Lustgarten is with us from ProPublica, looking at the disposal of toxic waste, hazardous waste by the U.S. military. Abram, I want to focus in a little bit more on Wisconsin. Now, you mentioned probably the most famous site, the Badger Ammunition Plant. You've got on your chart a total of 61 military installations in Wisconsin that contain at least one hazardous site. All but five are marked on the map and chart as response complete. So, first of all, what does that mean if they're reported as response complete?
So I'm not familiar with those exact sites, but the term response complete is a bit of a term of art from the Pentagon, and what it literally means is that their response is complete. It does not mean what it suggests, I think, to many people, which is that a site has been cleaned up or is somehow safe. So there's a lot of ways that they can reach that category of response complete, and it can include fencing off a facility to try to keep the public out so that they're not endangered by the toxins on that site. It can include determining that another responsible party, as they call it, is at play. So let's say, like, Chevron leased a part of a property for a couple of years, that they're transferring liability for that cleanup over to Chevron, or that's just a hypothetical, but to another entity. So there's all sorts of ways in which the Army concludes its process of environmental liability, and that's essentially what response complete means. And you'll see in the data set that we mapped that many of those response completes come with conditions, like children shouldn't play at this site or people should not have access to this site, even though response is complete.
And we've got at the other end of the spectrum two facilities listed as high risk here in Wisconsin. That's the Anago Air Force Station in Langlade County and, again, the former Badger Army Ammunition Plant in Baraboo in Sauk County. So if a facility in Wisconsin or elsewhere is listed as high risk, what does that mean?
So the risk rating is relative to the Pentagon's other cleanup sites. Generally, it does mean what you would think it would mean, which is that it's not a very safe place to be. But technically what it means is that it's high risk compared to all of the other defense sites, which probably is an understatement of the actual risk. But this just means that of the 40,000 sites that the Pentagon has on its list, that this is the most important, the most likely to endanger public health or public safety.
Now, what does the U.S. military, what does the Pentagon say about the current status of things like open burning of hazardous waste and all these sites that are in various stages of cleanup?
All right. Well, as you might expect, you know, the military emphasizes the efforts that they're making to clean up these sites and the progress that they've made. So they emphasize that they have a $3 to $4 billion annual budget for environmental issues, and about $1.5 billion of that goes directly towards cleanup of these sites. They point to a number of sites that have been cleaned up. And regarding open burning, you know, they say that they're lessening the practice, they're phasing it out over time. You know, that they only do it when it's absolutely necessary. You know, we of course found that wasn't necessarily the case at some of the open burn sites that we looked at. And in my, you know, in my interviewing with Pentagon officials, unofficial interviewing, you know, what I often hear is that there's a feeling of futility within the environmental ranks at the Pentagon, with too many sites, too much of a problem, as big as $1.5 billion is in terms of a funding pot, that it's not quite enough. And so they're kind of in maintenance mode. That money gets spread over, thousands and thousands of sites, and it means a few dollars for each one, and they make some incremental progress on all but, you know, the most critical sites.
I want to key in on a couple points of interest. You write that often cleanup is outsourced to private companies that don't always do very well. And there's one case I think you wrote about in Louisiana where a company had been improperly storing explosives instead of disposing of them, and that was discovered when they exploded.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So what we found, you know, across the board is that a very significant portion of these cleanups get outsourced to environmental contractors. And once that happens, and that outsourcing itself isn't problematic, but once that happens, the oversight really drops off a cliff. So the Pentagon has not, routinely followed up on the performance of their contractors. They kind of wash their hands of it and assume that, you know, because the contract says the site will be cleaned up, it will be. And if you look a layer further, like we did in Louisiana, and we found, you know, we looked at an example where contractor blatantly committed fraud with their site. I mean, they claimed to be taking hazardous waste and recycling it, repurposing it, and in fact were trucking it to an entirely different state and dumping it in a public space. There's criminal investigations that are underway in that case, but what was most interesting to me about it wasn't the crime, but the fact that the Air Force wasn't aware of it. There had been, this particular company had been indicted for similar crimes, fraudulent disposal of hazardous waste, several times before, going back more than a decade, and the Air Force and the Department of Defense had continued to recontract with this company again and again, hundreds of contracts worth tens of millions of dollars. And that was illustrative of this just gap of responsibility between the groups that are actually paid to do something with these dangerous materials and the Pentagon, which is the ultimate entity that's responsible for it.
And one more look at a story. I think this one was in Virginia. Correct me if I'm wrong. One of these open burn of hazardous waste sites. The community, there's a school not too far away. People in the community wanted some kind of testing of air quality by the school in particular. What was the outcome there?
Yes, so that testing has not yet been done. And in fact, that's the same story for any open burn site across the country. These open burns are generally conducted with a permit that the EPA gives the Department of Defense. And that permit is based on essentially a computer model, an estimate for how much pollution they think would potentially emanate from burning this toxic material. And what we reported on was that no one had ever gone out and actually measured what comes from burning this material to confirm whether the models are accurate or to see whether the winds or local weather patterns or local geography might endanger a specific place, more than the EPA permits would hypothesize that they do. And so, as you mentioned, in Virginia, we reported on one open burn site at the Radford Army Ammunition Plant. And it's interesting, that site's interesting because there's an elementary school that's about 1.2 miles directly downwind from the burn pads. People in that community have significant health problems. They're very concerned about their health and about the environment. It's difficult epidemiologically to blame that on a specific cause, but they have a lot of questions. The elementary school is rated in an EPA hazard system to be one of the most at risk in the country, but the Army and the EPA and the state environmental agencies hadn't taken the extra step to actually go and see if the emissions from the burning practices were making their way to this elementary school or to the surrounding community. And that's a pattern of behavior that's the same more or less across the country.
Abram, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Abram Lustgarten, senior environmental reporter at ProPublica. He joined us to talk about a new report detailing military toxic waste sites, including those in Wisconsin. You can find a link to that article at WPR.org/Central Time. Coming up, why do we end up with bad or disappointing gifts? A psychologist tells us how we can avoid common gift-giving mistakes. Stay with us here on Central Time.